The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hi, this is Ernie Hudson, and you're listening to Canned Air Podcast.
Everyone, and welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to comics and pop culture. I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
And returning to the show, boy, it's been a minute since this cat's been on, a long time. And if I remember correctly, I think he was here for our very first retro roundtable we ever did, where we talked about Ghostbusters. Almost
was it?
Positive. Yep. We welcome back today a comic creator to talk about his new book, The Illusion Witch, creator Ruben Romero to the show. Ruben, thank you so much for being back, sir.
Thank you for having me. It feels good. It feels like I'm home.
It does feel good, man. I mean, you were a reoccurring guest for some time. I mean, this has got to be, number four, maybe, I think now? It's been, I need
something
to go look.
At least, yeah.
You've been on a few different times, and always a pleasure. So very excited. We know we're in for a good episode today. But in our retro roundtable, we're going to be talking about just magic and magicians from throughout pop culture, just because of Ruben's comic, The Illusion Witch, where she's herself is an illusionist. So just kind of
magic and those who make it.
Yeah, paying tribute to the the theme of Ruben's book there. So yeah, magicians and magic from throughout pop culture. I have a few things here. This was a little more difficult for me. I don't know about you guys, but then we're going to turn our attention over to Ruben and talk about The Illusion Witch. But before we do all of that, don't forget to find us on Twitter at CannedAirPod and on Instagram at Canned_Air. If you like what we're doing, want to show some support, head over to patreon.com/CannedAirPod. Our Patreon has gotten that revamp.
Mm-hmm. Looks good, too.
Yeah, it's coming along, isn't it? There's still some more kinks to be worked out. We're getting the merchandise all worked out for the Patreon. But yeah, all the new tiers are set up. And
shiny.
Very nice and shiny. It looks like it should have looked a long time ago now. And new content is rolling out. I might want to be posting something else here in the next few days. So just keep an eye out on it. All kinds of good things. I think we're going to do an episode where it's pretty much just a glorified commercial where we just keep playing a bunch of clips from all of our different Patreon shows. Like, you want to give us your money now? Huh? How about now?
I'll tell you, every time we ask, clip that out and put it in there.
Right. So don't forget that. Jack, what am I forgetting?
Well, Tuesday nights, most of the time, around 9:30 p.m., come hang out with me and Randy as we play some Jackbox and maybe meet another podcast or something like that.
Yeah, you guys always have a comic creator or a different podcast come on the show to promote and play games.
Mm-hmm.
Always fun to watch. I watch it sometimes. I watched it last week. It was a good time.
Win some prizes, maybe, too. Yeah.
You want that Canned Air shirt?
Like that. Yep.
That's a place to get it.
That's it.
Want a mug? Don't want to fork over the money for it? Play some games. That's how you
grab
get it.
Grab a bag of old comic books?
Yeah. I mean, all right. I'm harping here. All right. Let's kick off with this week's Retro Roundtable.
Do it. Do it.
Come on.
I'm here.
Come on.
Do it now.
Oh, my God. It's so funny.
Taste bad.
All right, gentlemen, magic and magicians from throughout pop culture. Jack, kick us off.
My first one that came to mind, which took me a long time, is from a movie, which I heard such good things about, but never did watch it until recently. I watched both of them, the Now You See Me movies. I don't know if any of you guys have seen those.
No, but that sounds familiar. Yeah. Who was in that?
Woody Harrelson. What's his name that played
Jesse Eisenberg?
Jesse, yeah.
I never saw that. No,
Who else? There's a couple other people. Basically, they're called the Four Horsemen. They're illusionist magic people, but they're like a magic group that they go out, and it's basically a heist movie.
Oh, there's something that's
going on. I think Morgan Freeman, he's in it too, in both of them, and he is like a magician from way back in the day. That he's like their nemesis. He's like the bad guy in the first movie or something like that.
And really?
Yeah, there's a big heist that he causes them. But the one thing about it is it's set, of course it's set in real life, but the magic is actually shown to be like it is actually magic. It's not just illusions they're doing.
They're doing real magic in their world. Magic.
There's small things that happen that you're like, there's no way, but it actually is magic. Because there's a kind of like the Templars, the secret society of magicians that's what they're part of. But there actually is a real magic secret society out there. It was cool. It was a good movie. The second one was good. One of the girls that was in the first one, she wasn't in it for some reason, but they got another chick to take her place, which she was pretty cool at magic too.
Huh.
It was a good movie though. Now You See Me, Now You See Me.
I didn't even realize there was a second one, but that does sound good. It makes me think of the Edward Norton movie, The Illusionist.
I never saw that one either.
Ruben, you see that one?
Yeah, actually, I've seen both of them. I love Now You See Me too. The whole plane illusion, like that whole trick that they pull off, like that was pretty sweet. And both of those movies have like a level of like just believability, because you see people like David Blaine and David Copperfield, they pull off these huge, massive illusions out in public spaces where you're like, no, there's no way that's possible. But like, you know, they make it believable, even though, you know, you're sitting there watching a movie and there's a whole bunch of different tricks that go into this whole elaborate scheme and scene. But like, it feels real when you're watching it. You're like, oh, that's pretty inventive. I enjoy those movies.
And being a heist movie too, that they'll always be like, all right, so this is what we're going to do. And then while they're explaining it, they're going through the whole heist part, and it's just like step by step.
So happening. It's like Ocean's 11 kind of
pretty
a
much with magic. Yeah. Like in the second one, there's a whole part where they all have a card, and there's like a secret code on that card. And they're sitting there doing all this sleight of hand, passing this card around this room because they need to download something onto a server. And I don't know. I don't remember what country they were though, but this card is just flying all over the place. And it was so smooth that nobody had any idea what was going on. Woody Harrelson's great too.
Now you make me want to watch it.
That is a good movie. Who's it? Mark Ruffalo's in it too.
Yeah, the whole cast is like everybody in the movie is a good actor. Like there's nobody that they slacked on in terms. I think even who is it? Michael Caine. Michael Caine's in the second one, I think.
Yeah,
as well.
That's right.
Yeah.
Man, he's really gotten on my radar.
Man, yeah, I don't think they were really big, but those who watched it, it's like almost a cult thing, maybe. Almost.
I keep thinking of every time I try to remember this film, my mind goes straight to what was the Kevin Spacey film where he was teaching kids how to like count cards and he'd take them to the
21.
21.
Yeah.
Now, was that Jesse Eisenberg as well? Who was the kid in that?
No, that's Jesse Eisenberg is in it, but it's the kid from Across the Universe, Jim Struggs.
Oh, yes. Okay.
God, damn, I'm just Ruben, an endless you have
a memory like a steel trap, son. I appreciate that.
No, I just have so much useless information. I just love movies. I love movies. I think I watch too much TV sometimes, but at the same time, it's one of those things where it's like it helps me hone my craft. So
Yeah.
I get it.
Hey, make stories. You got to know stories,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's just turn our attention to Ruben. And how about you? A magician or just magic from throughout pop culture, man?
You know, I went with magic. I went for at least for my first one here. I went with the Patronus charm just because I think it's one of the coolest magic spells that I've ever seen, because it involves you having to tap into like a pure memory for you to be able to embody this, you know, ethereal form of magic that comes out of your wand for it to protect you against the darkness. So I thought, you know, I thought, Not only is it cool, but it's also kind of beautiful, you know, where you do have to kind of center yourself and put yourself back into like a specific moment for you to even be able to conjure it, you know. So it always stuck out to me reading the Harry Potter books, and I always thought that it was such a great way of showing like who you are on the inside, because like the Patronuses take the shape of, you know, what, you know, something that you love or something that you admire. So it always stuck with me.
It reminds me of, you know, again, having to be in a certain state of mind for, you know, the magic to work. It makes me think of Peter Pan, like it, the way you had to keep a happy thought in mind if you wanted to fly. And I'd be like, man, I'd be falling to my death over, like, it would not work for me.
Like the state puff idea of a sudden popping in your head. There's always going to be something popping in your head to take your mind off of what you're thinking of.
Oh, yeah. I can't imagine holding a happy thought period but long enough to fly. Jesus Christ. Yeah. I mean, you're asking for a lot there.
Start getting that little bit of doubt, and then you're like, shit, I can't think of what I was happy about.
Yeah.
Yeah. And here come the Dementors. That's it.
I was thinking about Harry Potter, and I think I really have to sit and watch the movies because I've seen them all, but they were so spread out between the times I saw them. I forget what happened.
Yeah.
That, and they're so deep. And I've always, I grew up, my grandma was straight from England, so she had a British English accent. So I was always pretty easy to understand what she was saying, but sometimes their enunciation of stuff. Like, I don't think I would be able to use some of the spells.
A little too British.
I don't know if I'd be pronouncing it right because I'd have the American accent in it.
Do not a spell, governor. I know what you mean. I know what you mean. Yeah, I don't know. Harry Potter, I know exactly what you mean with those films. I remember, man, I don't know. It's been probably about 4 or 5 years ago now, but there was a weekend there where, like, there was a ton of snow on the ground. I was sick. You know, just, you're not going anywhere for a long time. So I watched them all back to back. And I had seen a few of them, but for the most part, that was the first time I'd seen most of them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like you said, there was so much that happened within them. But, you know, a few years later, I don't remember Dick.
Yeah.
I really don't. Like, I remember, like, the final battle a little bit, like some of the last movie, because that's when it got really good for me. It got kind of dark, and, like, you know, some of these characters were getting killed off and stuff. I was like, okay, I can kind of get on this now if they're going to start getting, you know, a little dark on us. But
their names are so strange, too. I think I have a hard time grasping.
I couldn't
the name
tell
with
you
person.
A fucking thing that happened in any of them. Any of them.
I've got like an always tattoo, which again is just like a reference from the movie between Severus and Lily Potter, which is Harry's mom. Mm. The movies always, they just always stuck with me. You know, like it always felt like it was one of those stories that for some reason it wasn't for me because I remember my little brother reading the Harry Potter books. And I was like, I wasn't about it. I was like going outside and playing basketball. And it wasn't until later on, like maybe like my mid-20s, where I actually picked up the Harry Potter books. And, you know, to me, I tell people all the time, if you can get past the first two stories, same thing with the movies, like with the kids stuff, they do. They start to get a little bit more serious, a little bit more darker. And right around you hit that, you know, the Half-Blood Prince mark. That's it. It gets, you know, especially with the movies, like even the color grading on the movies changed to embody, you know, a more darker tone, almost a DC version of what we were watching in the first few films. So it does. It grows with I think she had the luxury of being able to grow with her fan base. And her fan base was reading those books as they grew up. So she was able to do that. And that, you know, it worked out for her, obviously.
Sure.
I think that's part of it, too, is if I had read the books, I would understand more who was what was going on a little bit better.
I get the appeal.
Because I know there's so much more always in the books than what's going
Absolutely.
On.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, I think... I guess my disinterest first came, you know, kind of like Ruben said, if you can get first through those first few books and movies, you know, in my first exposure, I was working at it like a movie. I was working at a Sam Goody when that first one first came out on DVD. And that, I mean, that was fucking hype. I mean, we couldn't keep that in the store. So I was like, well, I got to watch this. And after I watched it, I was like, what the fuck, man? what's the deal with this? But so that's why, you know, I didn't follow up with them.
Right.
But, you know, years later, and you know, everything Ruben's saying is right. And they are good films. I'm not saying they're bad. They're just not my cup of tea. My sister is obsessed with them. And again, I get it. I totally get
it. Either love it or you're like, eh. It's good.
I mean, I guess just the whole wizardry thing is, I don't know, the whole thing's a little too cozy for me, if that makes any sense at all, does it?
I can understand that. It all feels really safe and like there's no real threat. And even going through it with Voldemort and all of that, like, at the end of the day, he wasn't the greatest villain. I mean, Jesus, he couldn't take over a high school. You know what I'm saying? But there was, I don't know, there was, like Star Wars, it has so many life lessons in it, and it's really weird what you take out of it, especially when you're looking for a certain message or a certain, you know, to feel a certain way. Those books, like I said, you know, coming back on here, and I'm, you know, not joking, it's, you know, talking to friends that, you know, that you've known for a long time, it feels like that. Like, I'll go back to those books and read them from cover to cover just because it feels like going home, you know?
Yeah.
It's just one of those things.
I understand that totally. And, you know, I prefer Star Wars, obviously. I don't think the two can be compared, obviously. But, you know, it was just brought up. But, you know, Star Wars, I mean, going back to that cozy thing, you know, even in Star Wars, when you're at your safest moment, you're still sitting in sand drinking fucking blue milk. Like, you're never totally safe. Yeah. You know what I mean? Okay, the Empire's not after my ass, but something else is going to be really quick if I don't keep him moving. I don't know. It's, again, too cozy for me. But anyway, my pick is going to have to be very unconventional. I didn't see him in any wiki list or Google list I brought up. He came to mind as probably one of the most unfortunate magicians ever, from the old Christmas movie Frosty the Snowman. Now, this is a guy, remember the bad guy magician in the film?
From Frosty? No, I don't.
Now, this is how Frosty got his top hat. This is how Frosty got his top hat, his magic hat. This was a failed magician who just didn't do a good trick. And then just by chance one day he come across a magic hat and lost it to a fucking snowman, man. Snowman and kids. Like, you had been aspiring to be a magician your whole life, and finally you find a real bit of magic. And it's just taken from you. Just taken from
you. To a snowman.
To a snowman and fucking brats, man.
I don't think I've ever seen Frosty the Snowman, actually.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't think I ever caught it when I was little.
I mean, watching it for me is like only a nostalgia thing. So if I hadn't seen it, I'd be like, I don't give a shit.
I think I just liked the song better. I didn't want to watch it and...
I mean, the song is pretty much tells you exactly what happens in the movie. Yeah, it's exactly. A spoiler, so, you know.
Just drawn out for a half hour versus...
pretty much.
15-second song.
Pretty much. Pretty much. But,
Is that the stop-motion one or the traditional animation Frosty?
That's the animation one. Was there a stop-motion Frosty?
There was a stop-motion Frosty.
What?
Yeah.
Like a Rankin and Bass Frosty?
I don't know who produced it, but I remember my son threw on all the old Christmas stuff for him during the holidays, and it popped up and it looked like, you know, it was like that old clay almost sort of looking type of thing.
You're not thinking of
it
was the snowman at the beginning of Rudolph, are you?
Nah. This was like all snowman.
What the
fuck? It was like a whole snowman story. Like, wow. It could be produced, you know, it could be recent, but it just looked like one of those older movies, you know, it looked like something older. And I just figured maybe I missed a snowman story when I was growing up, and I was like, okay, well, this is it. Cause it was like all the old, you know, Charlie Brown and all that stuff. And like, it was all on Apple TV for a little while. So he was watching all of that stuff. And I was just like, oh,
might've been on when you were watching Rudolph as a kid,
maybe
one of the other channels.
It was on fucking PBS when Rudolph was on NBC. Yeah. Yeah. I never even heard of that. Never heard of that. But, man, I don't think I'm probably going to dig too deep into that. Frosty doesn't. Christmas is over. Fuck it. You know?
To search for that, you'd watch it and be like, really? That was it? Because that's happened to me before. Like, be like, oh, I'm going to watch Rudolph this year. And then I watch it and it's over. And I'm like, it's just not the same as what
you know,
I was
it's so
kid.
Funny. We on the show, on past episodes, a long time ago, it had come up, and I don't know if you remember this, where I had somehow, I knew the song, like, I'm Mr. White Christmas, mm-hmm. I'm Mr. Snow, and I hadn't seen that movie. That's what, Year Without a Santa Claus?
Yes.
And I kept sitting here, we all sat here thinking, like, how could I know that fucking song, but I'd never seen the movie? I figured it out. Batman and Robin. When Arnold Schwarzenegger has all of his henchmen sitting around going, sing, sing. Yeah,
they're singing it.
That's where right. I know it from. So I have never seen it. Mystery figured out that only I care about, apparently, but I just wanted to get that documented in the show's history here.
Lock it away.
We figured it out. All right.
In all places, Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
Right.
The worst
always
one, too.
There to show us the way, isn't it? All right, Jack, back to you.
Oh, another big magic thing that I've always loved was the game, the original Kingdom Hearts. I didn't play any of the other ones. I don't know if you ever played those.
Yeah, the very first one we got for, what was that, PlayStation 2, I think.
I think so, but it was a cross between, like, Final Fantasy and Disney World.
Final Fantasy Disney, yep. Yeah. And I remember getting to a level that was just unbeatable and saying, fuck it.
I did the first time. It was the Alice in Wonderland. I had a real hard time, but then years later I played it again and was able to beat it.
Hmm.
But I remember it was when somewhere around the Aladdin part of it, when the genie came out. It was like the first time the genie comes out, and when the lamp got rubbed, there was all kind of billowing clouds and stuff, and then the wispy sparkles, and then the genie comes out, and just thought, man, you know what? Disney magic has always been the best.
It really has. I mean, especially if you've ever been to the theme park. I mean, Jesus, they really pump it up.
Yeah, I can't even imagine because I've never been to any of the Disneys yet.
I mean, I'm trying to think of, like, quick, immediate examples. But, like, I remember, like, when we went one of the times, there was, like, this Little Mermaid experience thing. Pretty much you just sit in the theater with glasses on, but you know, anytime it'd splash, you'd feel water, you can feel wind. I mean, they just really pull you into it, like, mm-hmm. all the sights, smells, feeling the stuff. It's crazy. I can't even, like, fully explain it to, like, truly give it justice,
but, and you can't watch, like, YouTube videos because all you see is what's happening. You don't get the full experience.
It's nothing short of magical. See, and that's the difference I think between Universal Studios and Walt Disney World. Universal Studios is fucking fun. Walt Disney World is magic. And it's the truth. It's the truth. You leave Disney World feeling like you've experienced something. Hmm. And again, Universal Studios is cool as shit, but you're just like, oh, that was fun. What's next? You know, it feels like a theme park, if that makes sense to anybody.
Oh, yeah.
But. It does. It does. We talk about it's actually. It's funny that you even bring it up because it's on my list. Disney Magic is on my list because mm-hmm. I'm an annual pass holder and I go there. I mean, obviously, with the pandemic, it shut down for a bit. But once it got open again, we felt, you know, very comfortable going there. And they do. They provide. I mean, you want to talk about Star Wars, like that whole Batu. And that's Star Wars Rise of Resistance. When you walk in there, like, you are in Star Wars. Like, I just had the most amazing experience building my own lightsaber at the park, like 2 months ago. And literally, you know, I don't want to spoil the experience, but, you know, like, a lot of stuff goes into it. You're not just, you know, cramped in a room with a bunch of other sweaty people. Like, there's only 8 other people in the room or 10 other people in the room with you. I think there's like 10 or 12 spots. And, like, you are in the back of, like, a workshop and, you know, Yoda talks. It's the craziest thing. Like, I was in tears by the end of it. And that's only because it's the Disney magic. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not just walking up into a store and buying a saber, you know, inside a box. Like, you actually feel like you're somewhere in the galaxy and some, you know, you're tinkering away, building your saber. And there's this guy telling you a story, you know, and it's just these amazing moments that can only happen in Walt Disney parks. Because again, I, like you, I've been to Universal and I love it. I love the Harry Potter section and it's one of my favorite, you know, places in Universal, but it pales in comparison to anything that Disney does inside their parks.
No doubt.
I know if I went in to do the Star Wars at Disneyland, I'd probably walk in weak in the knees.
I've watched
know it.
I've watched the experiences on YouTube several times, and you know, like you said earlier, you know, you can watch it on YouTube and you don't get the full experience, which is true.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you do see the magnitude of what they're doing yeah. in those videos. And one thing that comes to mind is that Rise of Resistance ride.
That's I've watched it, and it blows even, me away just to sit and
yeah,
watch
yeah, just watching the video, you get the scope of the emotion and the feeling that's being pumped through you. Because essentially, and Ruben, correct me if I'm wrong, but what I took from the video is, you know, you're walked into like this transporter pod thing, and once you get in there, it shuts. And you know, obviously, all the windows around you are screens, but they're screens of the exact outside you know, the real life you just walk through, and it shoots you straight up into space, and you get into one of these. I mean, it feels like you really left the Earth for a few minutes.
And then you come back in a totally different spot.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh yeah. No, when you take off, you're immediately captured. By the First Order, and then you're boarded, and the doors, like, you get caught, and then the doors snap open, and like there's a First Order officer with like a garrison of First Order troopers, and they come in, blasters pointed, and they're like, get out, you know, like you're going to the detention center, and they put you in a jail, like they put you in a jail cell. Kylo Ren comes, you know, and comes to interrogate you, and he's called away by Hux, and then the whole ride starts, you know, they literally cut a piece of wall out of your cell, and the resistance comes in and gets you out of there. And like, it's this whole experience that, like, again, I don't think anybody really, like, you won't be able to feel it, like you said, until you really do it. When you're on that Star Destroyer and you smell the smells and you see the stormtroopers, and Kylo Ren is stalking you through the halls of this thing, like, it is really something else. Like, I was lucky enough to go, you know, like I said, during this pandemic where there was not a lot of people. And again, they're still doing that ride queue where you can only really ride the thing once. So I was lucky where my mother-in-law was with us. So we got to child swap. So I got to go back to back on the ride. The first time I ever rode it, I got to ride it back to back times. I got to go with my girlfriend, and then I got to go with my mother-in-law. So I was completely lucky and blown away, and lucky enough to experience both tracks, because there's two different ways your ride can go inside Rise of Resistance. So it's an amazing, magical experience. And like I tell people all the time, they're like, I'm not really into Disney. I'm like, yeah, that's what you say until you get there. When you get there, you start to feel like a kid again, and you're like, you can't help but smile and laugh. And when you got kids, it's 100 times better, because they're really in it. And watching them, you start to get that feeling again, and what it feels like to really have that child's imagination, where all of this stuff is more than real. You know?
Right.
That is Mickey Mouse when he's looking at him, you know? So it's one of those things where it's just like, you remember how magical that place is, and has that effect still. You know, 39 years old, and I go there, and I'm just like, I got to see everything. I got to stay till the fireworks launch, you know? I want to see the castle. Like, I'm all about this some Disney magic.
So when you watch the new Star Wars movies, do you recall the smells and stuff that you see happening on screen? I just wonder. I'm serious. It's like PTSD type thing where you're like, oh my God, I remember that.
Yeah, carbon scoring, you know? Yeah. You know, when those lasers hit that metal, man, that metal tinge, you know, there's nothing quite like it. Nothing quite like it.
It's funny because the first time I ever went to Disney World was in 2000, year 2000. And to this day, there are things like illusions and stuff that they had set up there that to this day I can't figure out how they did. And that's magic. I mean, it just sends you home just like scratching your head. Like, how did they possibly do that? You know, it's incredible stuff. And it's weird because then I don't even know what it is now. Maybe it's a whole Toy Story Land, but it used to be like the World of Tomorrow or something like that, like a futuristic look at the world. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember there was this experience where you could go in, and I think I've talked about this on the show a long time ago. Like, a handful of people go into like a small auditorium and sit in a circle around this tube where, you know, they say, oh, we've made contact with another world, and, you know, their president or their leader is going to teleport down and say a few words to you. And something goes wrong, and they teleport some big alien down, killer alien, and so the lights go down, and when it comes up, there's this huge alien scratching, and it looks just like a Xenomorph, thank you, from Alien.
Yeah.
But obviously, this was the royalty-free version of the thing. But again, you know, just like the lights would go down, and you'd feel the top of your seat like go down, like he was running across the top of the seats, or you could like all of a sudden hear it like in your face, and you'd feel saliva hitting you, or you'd feel its tongue on your neck. Like they just mess with you the whole way. But I remember in the waiting line, I think it was to that ride, there was just all kinds of weird shit just like behind ropes for you to look at while you waited in line. And there was this big cage that had something that looked like a big butterfly or something in it. And the light would go down and like come right back up immediately. And whatever the fuck was in there was just totally gone. And I was like, I still to this day can't put my head around like, how did they do that? I never took my eye off it. It never fucking moved, but it's empty. How did they do that? Was it ever even there? I don't know.
You're talking about Alien Encounter, which has now been repurposed to Stitch's Adventure. So now they, from Lilo and Stitch, now they beam Stitch in, and Stitch runs amok. Because I think the Xenomorph was a little too intense for Disney goers back in the day.
I tell you what, man, it was intimidating. I mean, I remember people in that theater like screaming, like scared, because this thing was vicious. And just, you know, when you saw it in that tube clawing and kicking to break itself out, like, yeah, I get it being too extreme for kids. I get it.
Well, now that they officially own the Xenomorphs, they should definitely bring the ride back, the experience back, I think.
Oh, it'd be so cool. I'd love to try that again. Then they also, then the second time we went, this was maybe about 7-8 years later, they had turned a part of that building into a Mike from Monsters, Inc. Mm. Mm-hmm. It was a comedy club where they just collected
laugh.
What'd you say?
The laugh floor.
Laugh floor. Mm. And we'd gone in there, and we just thought we were just going to be watching a cartoon character on a screen, you know, do a comedy routine while we sit there go, or. No, this thing, it was a cartoon character on a screen. But he was pointing people out, and not only pointing them out, but distinctive like characteristics about them. And
good God,
it was freaky. And all of a sudden you saw us turn like pale white and our eyes get big. Like, oh shit, we are such easy targets. There's no way he's not going to say something. But luckily he didn't point us out, but it was incredible again how they did that. I mean, I think that was probably just, you know how they do that, like that mapping. So like maybe
motion capture mapping
kind of thing. But sure sounded like Billy Crystal. Unless they've got Billy Crystal chained somewhere in Disney.
They got him down there.
All right. I think that's going to do it for talking about magicians, unless anybody had anything else to add quickly. No? All right. Well, let's turn our attention over to Ruben and talk about the Illusion Witch. And, man, again, it's so great to have you back. See, you're making comics again. It's been a little while since we heard from you. And this book, man, sounds super interesting because I guess at surface level, when you hear something like the Illusion Witch, you think, okay, she's a magician, witch. What, is she going to be a hero or a bad guy? Not the kind of case here. This is just kind of and correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, I'm just giving my surface level impression of it, a comic about kind of self-discovery, right?
Yeah, and it's all wrapped up in an adventure, like in a big fantasy adventure.
Tell us about this book, man. I'm incredibly interested.
Yeah, I wanted to tell a story where somebody had gone through traumas in their life and had become disconnected and forgot the power of human relationships and what it meant to actually really care about somebody and care about something other than yourself. But I also didn't want to tell that story straight up. You know, I didn't want it to be an indie movie, you know, so to speak. I want to transition to film. So I always think of things in that aspect where, you know, is this an indie film or is this like a summer, you know, blockbuster tentpole kind of adventure kind of thing? And and that's where, you know, I wanted to take the Illusion, which I wanted her to be a real human person with, you know, undoubtable flaws, But for her to understand these things, she had to go through something, you know, extraordinary. You know, it couldn't just be some sort of therapy session that unlocked Pandora's box and allowed her to face her demons. It needed to be something that had some sort of real magnitude, that it actually mattered beyond just, you know, acknowledging some sort of flaw that you might have as a human being.
Right. That's incredible, man. So how did this concept then come to you? I mean, is this something, are you writing from like experience or a place in yourself? Where's the story coming from?
It comes from a lot of places. You know, my mom passed away in front of me, and, you know, 5 years ago. And right after that, I experienced a divorce. And I think that in a lot of ways, my psyche kind of broke down because I was continuously not acknowledging the fact that, you know, I was losing things, you know, because of disconnection and ill communication and because of disease and so on and so forth. So all of these things were happening to me and I just kept on moving, you know, and eventually I broke. Right. So it was one of those things where I didn't have to go into some Lord of the Rings realm. It just hit me like a Mack truck. So but I thought about my experience and about how hard and how many years it took me to actually even be able to tell people that my mom passed away without breaking down and kind of having to, you know, ignore it or drown it out with something, you know. So it was just one of those things where it was like, let me tell this story so that people can understand that, you know, just because things have happened to you doesn't mean that you need to close yourself off. It's actually the opposite. You know, the more bad things happen to you, the more you need people around you to help you get through it.
I think I could benefit from reading this book, probably. And that's not even me just trying to be funny. I mean, that sounds really good. I like that. So what about the creative team behind this book?
Oh, man. I'm fortunate enough to be working with Andrea Errico, who's done a ton of what you would call good girl, or what they would call good girl art for Zenoscope, you know, the pretty pinup covers and things like that, racy stuff. He has, he did some interior work for Hotline Miami for Behemoth Comics. And, you know, I was actually searching for artists for another project that I've got cooking up called Stay Safe Out There when I stumbled across Andre, and he sent me this huge, you know, PDF full of his art and samples and stuff like that. And I was just, in the back of my mind, I was kind of pussyfooting around with Delusion, which, because I was so scared to tell the story, you know, like I was so afraid that it was like, you know, even though it's a female protagonist, there is a lot of me inside of Adia. And, you know, and I was scared that, you know, a lot of the things that were in there were going to, you know, or the things that I was going to write about were going to bring up bad memories. But, you know, the minute that I saw Andrea's art and he said he was available, I had already had the first two scripts written. And I immediately, you know, the minute that he jumped on board, I went ahead and finished off writing 3 through 5. And, you know, he's been a blessing, man. He's an Italian artist, you know, working overseas. So it's kind of crazy, you know, how it all works out that, you know, I've got my artist, Andrea, who's in Italy. I've got my colorist, P.H. Gomez, who's in Brazil. Luckily, Dave Lentz is my letterist, and he's here in the States. And he's kind of the guy who's putting all my, you know, the whole book together in terms of when it's all done, you know, not just word bubbles, but, you know, just the way the book is designed, so to speak. Sure. He's going to be doing that. And yeah, I mean, I've got a great team, and, you know, I'm fortunate to be able to have this team to tell this story because it is important to me, you know, and I wanted to have, you know, just the best of the best working on it. And I feel like I've got, you know, I've got that.
Right. I mean, from what I've seen, I mean, I've seen some sample pages and it looks damn good.
Yeah, it does.
So you had mentioned at least, you know, issues 1 through 5 coming out. Is this going to be a self-contained story or is it, do you see it moving past those 5 issues?
You know, it's funny because the story's set in Sarai, which is a fantasy world that I've created. And in the last few months, last couple of months, I had a friend of mine, Chris Walk, who said the Romero verse. You know, we were talking about my writing and my creating and things like that. And I never really thought of myself as that person. But then I thought, well, you know, I'm continuously writing, I'm continuously creating. You know, Stephen King does it, you know, George R.R. Martin does it, you know, obviously, you know, so many people do it. I'm like, there has, you know, there's a world there that you can play with. You built it. There's no reason why you can't mess with it. So Sarai itself, the fantasy world, will come back. I have plans for that fantasy world, and it's different regions and different parts. I have a book. I have a book that I'm also working on. A couple scripts I'm finishing up now, on a book called Infinite Dungeon, aka Fuck This Quest, and it's set, it's set in Sarai. So Sarai will come back. But in terms of Adia Locke and the characters that we're going to meet in The Illusion Witch, like Beru and the Kelvin family, Siren and Syria and the Three, which is our big bad, that's a self-contained story. It's Adia's story. You know, I look at it much like what Boom is doing right now, with like Spy Island and like, well, that's Dark Horse, but like just different publishers are doing like these mini series runs where it's like, you know, 5 or 6 issues, and they tell this one story, and it's almost like a movie, you know. Exactly. And it would be a 2-hour movie or a mini series on, you know, on Netflix or something. And I think that's becoming the trend. So I kind of wanted to, for The Illusion Witch, to do this. I mean, every writer wants an ongoing series, you know, but I've got that with the agency. So Illusion Witch and Inferi, which is another book I've got out right now. Those two are mini series. Those are going to be self-contained stories. Inferi is going to be a little longer than The Illusion Witch, but Illusion Witch, yeah, that's going to be 5 issues. There's a little bit of stuff that I want to add, you know, so I might pull it out to 6, but yeah, there's a self-contained story there.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to go outside of that.
I think that's how such a story should probably be. I mean, to think of a, you know, based on what we've heard here, you know, again, that self-discovery, just because you've lost everything doesn't, you know, mean you've lost everything, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I can't see that really going on, you know, without getting really watered down into a full,
after a while, yeah, because you would think it would, you know, get better. And
being just a contained arc, yeah. You know, I totally get that, and I'm glad you said that. If you're going to say, oh yeah, we want this to go in the next 6 years, I mean, I'm sure it'd be good, but I mean, it would change. It would get, you know, obviously well off the rails from where you started.
Yeah, more than likely, yeah.
But
oh, for sure. Yeah, she's got a level to grow, you know, or levels to grow. And I think that, you know, story-wise, she's going to go through enough things that hopefully you as the reader will say, by the end of this thing, you know, I really like this woman, or I really love this woman. Like, you know, she's a great character. Whereas to maybe in the first issue or so, you're not going to really like her too much, you know, just cause that's the person that she is. You know, I think that when we've experienced that kind of trauma, we can, you know, maybe people who have known us for a long time can kind of stomach us, but like new people, they don't understand that mm-hmm. kind of, you know, brash, you know, disconnection. So, you know, luckily for her, she's got somebody in her corner who's been there for her for a long time. But everyone else around Adia Locke just doesn't really like her. You know, when they see her coming or see her approaching, it's, you know, more like, you know, my head's down. I don't want to make eye contact. I don't want to be berated by this person. You know, I don't want to be summoned to do something for this person. Right. So, you know, she's one of those people where, you know, you don't really want to hang out with her. You know, you don't want to go to lunch and, you know, grab a bite with her in the beginning.
Sounds like my kind of character. So, you know, last time we spoke with you, I believe you were releasing your books under the title Think Alike Productions. So is Think Alike mm-hmm. still a thing? Where is Think Alike Productions?
You know, sadly, like all, you know, like some things, they go to the wayside.
Sure.
You know, we talked about this before we turned on the mics, you know, how in the beginning I came out of the gate running, you know, like a thoroughbred. And really, I didn't know what I was running to. I was just trying to do what other people did. And I had a lot of success. I mean, you know, I was, you Absolutely. Know, on your show a few times. You know, we tabled at New York Comic Con, you know, 2-3 years running. did major giveaways. You know, we grew.
You guys had a fantastic looking presence at a con too. Yeah. Like your guys' setup was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, we went through. You know, it was a major thing. Like we were really committed to becoming a major publisher. But then I found myself running a business and not creating and not writing. And then that put stress on my then marriage, you know, and then my mom got sick and passed away. And so many things happened. And a lot of those creators evolved, like Bob Sally went on to Source Point Press and now has been tremendous success with Gargoyles, you know, Brian L. Hawkins, you know, just a ton of people who were there with me at the start are now, you know, having some major success. So, you know, it's a beautiful thing to see. But no, sadly, Think Alike Productions, you know, I had to put that to the side. Right now, I'm just, you know, focusing on myself as a writer. I created Ruben the Writer as just a little moniker to go by on Twitter and Instagram and you know, created a little logo so that I could put it on my books. You know, I'm working closely with a friend of mine, Casey Bowker, on another book called Inferi that has an issue out now. And we're getting ready to release issues 2 and 3 soon here. And he's got his own, you know, imprint, not so much a publishing label, but an imprint called DFAT Comics. They've got their own show, you know, their own podcast, Don't Forget a Towel, and their own, you know, website, Don't Forget a Towel News, that deals with pop culture. And they're also comic book creators. So they just created, you know, an imprint under that called DFAT Comics. And he was like, dude, we're working on Inferi, you know, no contracts, no nothing, you know, just bring everything over. And if you ever get picked up by somebody else, you go on your way, you know? And I was like, yeah, that's pretty awesome. He's like, yeah, well, you know, we'll put it on the website. And, you know, it's just a friend and a fellow creator looking out, you know, trying to put more eyes on me, you know, through their sites and things like that. But if we can grow DFAT, we're going to, you know, in terms of our creations and the things that we're doing, I don't think we're going to go outside looking for other creators to publish. But, you know, me and Casey, we've done a good job with Inferi, and him and Chris got another book that just funded called Pursuit of Plastic, which is a fun book about toy collecting. You know, it's just a move, a work in progress, but mainly just focusing on myself as a writer and a creator, and just trying to put out great stories.
I get it. When we started doing this show, you know, once we start getting some, I guess, good feedback and having some cool things happen to us, you know, I guess it's the same kind of thing. We hit the ground just running full force. We were recording this show. We were trying to do as much video content as we possibly could. And then came another series, the What If series. And, you know, I love every bit of it. Mm-hmm. I love all of it. But over time, you know, once it all, like, you know, it became work, like Ruben was saying.
Yep.
You know, time for creativity became minimal, and it was just about blogging, posting, social media. And it sucks it out. So we had to kind of backtrack ourselves. You know, all that shit kind of went to the side. No more video production for some time. We're going to put this other show to the side for a while. Let's just focus on what we started with and get this going first. So, I mean, I get it. I get it, man. Having too many irons in on the fire, getting you just get excited. You get that fucking fire in your belly, and you don't want to
do this. I could do this, but then you're doing all this, and then you're like, now what am I doing?
And to sit and say that's even a misstep is wrong, because it's not.
No.
You know, I think if you have that initial fire, it's always going to be there. You just have to find a way to manage it so it doesn't burn you up. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. And I think that, again, you know, like if it would have just been me, you know, then that it would have been a different story. But again, you know, you start to bring in other creators and you start to feel responsible for these people, you know, and the things that they want to do and the shortcomings of, you know, a publisher that you yourself as a new business know you can't do, you know, for certain things, you know, and again, you start feeling this sense of responsibility to where you're more worried about somebody else's release and making sure that their files are good at Comixology and so on and so forth, that you're not sitting down and writing, you know? And again, it just becomes, you know, what do you want to do? Do you want to run a publishing company or do you want to be a writer? You know? And that was a question I had to ask myself, you know, when the smoke cleared and the dust settled after the divorce, I said, okay, what is it that you want to do? Do you want to own a business or do you want to be a writer? You know, because as much as I love comics, I love watching people succeed and I love watching people, you know, do great things. So there's a part of me that does love to be that shepherd, so to speak. You know what I'm saying? That doesn't even create anything, just puts you on the path and helps you and guides you. But there's a way larger part of me that wants to tell stories. And, you know, maybe there's a, you know, maybe that role for me of being the shepherd is down the line. For now, I just want to make sure that my voice is heard and that I grow that Romero verse, so to speak, and continue to build on top of it.
That's really cool. It's good to be talking with you again. You know, over the years since we haven't spoken, you've popped into my mind from time to time, and I guess I could have been, you know, a little more proactive and just sent a simple email. But I've always just wondered, you know, I hope Ruben's doing all right. I haven't heard from Ruben in a while. And it's just awesome to have you here and hear from you and hear that you're doing well, man.
I'm glad to be here, man. Yeah, I mean, everybody goes through a little metamorphosis. You know, you go through your ups and downs, missteps. You know, the Rock said something the other day that his dad used to tell him all the time. He said, "And it's okay to have setbacks. Just don't let it set you back." And I'm going to keep that with me. Here at 39, I'm still learning gems and things that I'll probably pass on to my son from other people who have experienced things that have not let them break them, you know? Mm-hmm. And you know, even, and it's okay to break too, because when you break, you can just reform the pieces even stronger. And I think that that's what happened to me, you know, through everything that happened to me in those first few years of Think Alike, marriage, my mom getting sick, all of these things coincided together. And, you know, there's a lot of weight, you know, and I needed a moment. And then but now that I'm fully back in it, you know, having in fairy funding in the early part of 2019, having the agency 1-6 fund in 2020, and now coming here with the Illusion Witch and a couple other projects here for 2021, I feel so confident. And I feel like that kid in 2014 again, where I can, yeah, you know, I can take on the world. And it's one of those things where, like, you can only feel like that if you put in the work and you know, on both ends, not only as a creator, but as a person. So I feel like I've grown in so many ways from, you know, that kid that you had back on the show back then to now. So I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to be able to keep telling stories.
Me too, because you write some good ones, man. You write some good ones.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, as far as Twitter, Instagram, you can be found at Ruben the Writer. Where else should we be directing people, Ruben?
Yeah, nah, Twitter is my favorite. You know, Twitter, obviously, it's going to be a little less exciting now because I don't get to go on every day and tell Donald Trump how I feel about him. but I'm still finding ways to be happy on Twitter, you know.
Sure,
so you know, it's my favorite place to be, is social media wise. I love Instagram, but that's solely becoming like a dedication to my son. which it should be. I feel like I always wondered about parents. I'm like, how do parents post so many pictures of their kids? But now I get it. You know, it's one of those proud things that you only understand because it's your kid. But no, you know, I post a lot of I'm not the artist, I'm only the writer. So my Instagram visually is not very appealing. So, you know, I post a lot of art there, a lot of upcoming projects. But mostly, you know, you can find me on Facebook at Ruben the Writer or Ruben Romero. You can friend request me. I'm friendly. Or you can follow me on Twitter at Ruben the Writer.
And I forgot to ask this totally, when can we expect the first issue of Illusion Witch?
Well, the Kickstarter launches on January 28th, so next Thursday.
Okay.
So, you know, we're going to run 30 days. We're through production. I mean, God forbid it doesn't fund. It's okay, because I believe in this thing so much that it's all paid for anyway. And, you know, the Kickstarter is so I can get rewards and prints and, you know, do some cooler stuff with the release of the book. But the book is going to come out regardless. I mean, this is, you know, besides the agency, which is my baby, and I love that story. You know, the Illusion Witch is one of those things where I feel like it needs to come out no matter what. So even if it takes it a little longer than, you know, like I said, God forbid the Kickstarter doesn't fund, it'll maybe take me a couple more weeks to get it out there. But I believe so much in this thing that I, you know, even if the Kickstarter doesn't go well, I know that once people start to read it and the word starts to get around about it, I think, you know, it'll see the light of day. I'll be able to finish the story throughout. So I'm not too concerned about it. I'm not worried about it. I know that the path I'm on is a good path, and I feel like it's going to all work out. So I'm going to be able to tell Addy a story without a doubt.
I'm excited to check it out. It's going to be cool. Yeah. It sounds like something I need to read myself. So, Ruben, you always have a home here, brother. Anytime you want to come on, you just let us know. All right, man?
I appreciate it so much.
Very good. We appreciate you being back with us, man. Jack, what do we have on the website, sir?
Go to CanDairPodcast.com where you can see show highlights, guest info, listen to the show, follow us on all our social media, become a patron, buy some merch, see some YouTube videos, and if you'd like to be a guest, send us an email on our contacts page.
There it is. And also on that page, there's a link over to our Patreon page where $5 a month gets you access to the Candair Patreon pod, which is just a show that kind of goes all over the place. Sometimes we just sit and bullshit. Sometimes we sit and watch old commercials from the 80s and riff on them. All kinds of stuff we've done on that show. And then at $10 a month, there's a whole new tier, guys. All kinds of new stuff coming out. Remember the segment we cut from the show, the Comic Vault? Well, it's back.
There it is.
It has its whole new show now. It's its own show on Patreon, the Comic Vault, where we sit for about 30, 40 minutes and talk nothing but comics. And we have some special things coming out on there, too. Already, the Star Wars Radio Theater thing we did, when was that, Jack? 2016?
That one, and the day The Force Awakens came out and launched.
Yeah, we had it on that online for what, maybe a month, and then due to mixed reviews, we decided it's got to go.
I got to listen to it again.
I tell you what, on the re-listen, it was a lot of fun. But we have some radio theater projects we're releasing. One of the things I cannot wait to release is the interview that went wrong, that no one's ever heard of.
Uncle Larry?
No, not or Larry. Not. Uncle Lloyd.
Uncle Lloyd, that's right.
Lloyd
Uncle
Kaufman Lloyd from Troma. We had him on, and boy, did shit go south in that interview. So south that we didn't air it.
Yeah.
And it's never seen the light of day until now. We're going to pull it out. We're going to listen to it. We're going to give commentary. And if you want to hear it, I'm afraid you're going to have to pay for that, folks. Patreon.com/CanDairPod or just go to CanDairPodcast.com and hit that Patreon button. Anything else, Jack?
That's it for this week.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it then. So until next time, I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
And I am Ruben Romero.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone, and always remember to be excellent to each other.
Are mean, so I'm running away from home.
Where you gotta go?
I don't know yet, but that'll show them.
It sure will.
Shipwreck!
Parents just don't understand, and it gets lonely on the road, so be sure to listen to the Candair podcast.
And now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
This has been a Candair production.
Hi, this is comedian and writer, and let's be honest, I do a lot of things. This is Dean Archipotis, the host of Whiskey Business, the podcast not so much about whiskey as it is one with whiskey. Yes, we drink and talk about whiskey, but we do so much more with so many interesting people. For example, we talk to comedians like Greg Warren.
You know, I don't want to brag, but let's just say I can walk into a Red Lobster and get whatever. You know, I think the pause right there is probably more important than the word.
Amazing athletes like boxing champion Buster Douglas.
When a fighter's down and he's looking for his mouthpiece instead of trying to get up.
That's when I knew it was over.
Yeah, right?
And yes, Bigfoot chasers.
Do you believe in Bigfoot? And if so, does he really eat beef jerky?
The Bigfoot thing is people have seen these, and I've seen a lot of compelling evidence about it.
It's Whiskey Business with Dean Archipotis. Join us for what we call a good conversation with a good pour. You really can't ask for much more than that, can you, people? Check us out at WhiskeyBusinessPod.com, a proud member of the Evergreen Podcast Network.